All right. Welcome back to Raw Thoughts. Today we have Shad Vaye on. He is in leadership. He runs, you know, some car washes. He's a father. He's a mentor. He's kind of an all-around man.
Yeah.
So tell us about yourself, Shad.
So I started working when I was about 15 or 16, you know, but my career never really started till about 2003. I started working for a company called Niggle Beverage, which was Pepsi. I worked through the ranks from the bottom tier to supervisor roles to management roles, and we continually got bought out by bigger, larger companies. And so at one point, they told me, without a degree, this is your ending point. You can't move forward. You can't grow anymore. So for me, I looked for another opportunity, another business avenue, and I ran into a gentleman who owned car washes, and he's like, hey, come work for me. I'll teach you anything about it. So literally, by teaching me, he dropped me off and said, learn the business. Wow. So I was in the car wash business now for 10 years. And in that business as well, we kept getting bought out. So for me, I was like always nervous, like, man, I'm working for these companies that keep getting bought now. And is it going to be that way again? Like, I need a degree. Like, man, I don't know if I want to stick this out. I want to maybe look for something else. But fortunately, we got bought out by a company called Metro Express, and Bill Martin, Derek Martin and their family have been in the car wash industry 50 years. And they gave me an opportunity to become who I am today, and like learning how to mentor people and be a great leader. And they do it by leading themselves, you know, top down. Bill Martin's a great example. He's taught me a lot. His son, Derek Martin's taught me a lot. And they gave me an opportunity to become this area manager. And I've been able to do what I love the most is teaching, coaching, mentoring, and developing a culture. And so that's my business career. But I also have two boys, 14 and 12, Jameson and Jacoby. I'm married to my wife, Kayla, since 2007. So it's been a long relationship, but like every relationship, ups and downs and all arounds, and we keep moving forward, right? But for the most part, that's me, you know, work hard, play hard, have two boys, marriage, and just the American dream that we all strive to have.
Yeah. So did you ever want to go to college, or were you just like, I just want to work? Like, was that your culture? Was that your background where you're like, nope, I'm going to go to work first?
I really did want to go to college at first. I thought it would be really fun. You know, but then I got into everything else, like life. I was introduced to drinking and partying and living life and making money. And I started working and making a lot of money. And it was awesome, you know, but for an 18-year-old boy to make $9.50 in 2003 was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then $16 in 08. And it's like, oh, man, I'm making good money for a young adult. And then, you know, it just kind of started going from there. And I just kind of fell in love with working hard, making money, enjoying the world, you know, taking the trip to Vegas for $75 with my buddy Scotty J on a whim, like stuff like that. It was just like so intriguing to me to just do whatever, you know. I never had a bunch of structure in my life. So for me, it was just like just free for all.
That's awesome. Yeah. So you have a lot on your plate. You have, you know, mentoring people, you have leadership, you have the car wash, and then you have family, you have your kids. I mean, they're very involved with wrestling. What's that dynamic between both of those? How do you manage those?
It's a good question because it's been really hard for us. I know we've talked about this before, and it's like how you balance these personalities of fun-loving dad, crazy, I shouldn't say this, but crazy, drink, party, have fun, all that stuff. How do you balance that guy? And then you have a professional person who Monday through Friday in sitting in meetings, mentoring his team, giving them leadership, trying to guide them in the right direction and taking them to this culture of professionalism. And trying to bring those two people together is really, really tough balance. And then also being there for your wife and being that love of her life and treating her with all the respect that you possibly can. Like, it's so hard. But the one thing I'm working on every day is becoming a better version of myself. And it starts with just love, you know, love your kids, love your wife, love your job, love what you do every day. And it's not always the easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
When those two worlds have collided for me in the last 3 years, it was a shell shock because no one's ever showed me what a good father was, or a great husband was, or a great leader was. These are all things that I had to really study and listen to myself, look myself in the mirror and say, hey, who are you? What are you doing? Why are you this way? Or why are you that way? And just trying to create the person that everybody needs and loves. And sometimes you lose yourself a little bit in all that whole thing, but bringing them together has been a real challenge, but I'm getting better at it. And it's a lot of help through Kayla, my wife, and my boys being great examples for me as they're doing so well in their school and they're just being great leaders at school. And, you know, so it's good when I have them doing their part and I'm trying to do my part.
Yeah. And I mean, most people don't look at something and they're like, how do I become a better person every day? Or how do I start studying more about, you know, kind of the human design of how you can be a leader or what it means to be a leader. How did you look at yourself in the mirror and be like, Shad, this is what I need to be doing? Or how do I get better every single day?
In my personal life with the wrestling, with the boys being a good leader for them, I saw dad grab one of their sons at a wrestling tournament in Arizona. I remember exactly. We're in Arizona. His dad grabs his kid and puts him against the wall. He's like, you're not winning and you're losing. We're paying all this money for you to be out here. And I can't believe I'm wasting my money on you. And I said, that's what I look like when I talk down to my boys? That is ugly. That is somebody I don't ever want to be. Yeah. And maybe I am that person and I don't recognize it. There's a guy named Juan Pena in my life who kind of pulled me aside as when I was a young dad coaching my boys in wrestling. He's like, dude, you can't be that way. You can't be so aggressive. Leave them. They're just little boys. But in your mind, when you do spend that kind of money, you're like, they better win. They got to win. They got to win. You focus on the wrong things, you know? And so I had to look at myself and I threw somebody else's eyes and said, oh my God, look at how I'm behaving. Look how that gentleman behaved. And if that's how I look, that's ugly.
Yeah.
You know, and then I just leadership part of work. And how did I have to figure out that piece of it? I had to ask myself, where do I want to be in my career? What do I just want to be at this level? I mean, you know, is that okay just to be a manager or what more do I want? How can I provide and be a good example for my boys? And the best way I thought was, hey, what if I kept growing as an individual and a leader and keep growing my skills to become this manager that I'm over tons of stores? If I do that, then that's a good example for my kids. And so then I just started listening to podcasts. I started watching YouTube videos. I started reading books. I have a good friend named Shane Hall. He would sit with me once a month when he's in town. He runs a big alarm company. And he was just like, hey, these are some books you should read, or here's some people you should listen to. If these are things you're struggling, this is what you should be doing, you know? And so that was a lot of help for me. And I really appreciate that from Shane and from other mentors, a guy named Patrick McChristie, who was my boss at Pepsi. He's like, hey man, it's okay if you're here, but when you want to get to this next level, these are things you should probably look at or probably do. And so I always took people's advice and like kind of put them in my pocket, but then it took me some maturity to take it out and say, okay, they're right. Like I'm not doing the things I need to do to be who I want to be for my kids, for me, for, you know, fulfillment.
Yeah.
So
at least you put them in your pockets, because I feel like sometimes we give advice and then it just goes right over our heads. But at least you put that knowledge in your pocket, and for a later date you were like, oh hey, they weren't just, you know, telling me these things for no reason. Like they were helpful and they were beneficial in life.
Open mindset, right? Being willing to listen to somebody else, take that information, process it, and then use it today, tomorrow, later. I didn't know how to do that very well until I read a book called The 1 Minute Manager. And I started reading a book called The Energy Bus. And my sister, she's a reader too. So she started giving me books like self-help books, team development books, things like that. Easy reads, 100 pages. It looks like it's bold, double-spaced, you know, like it's a like super simple read. Like, yeah, that's easy. I can do that. And then I started reading those. And then, you know, when we would take the boys on road trips, my wife suggested, like, why don't we just listen to some of these books audible, you know? Like, if you don't feel like you have time to read them, you should listen to them. So she started downloading books for me to read, to listen to on the way to Utah, on the way to Oregon, on the way to Washington, no matter where we go to take the boys wrestling. Like, she was bought in as much as me to help me develop, you know? But she was like, hey, you should read that book that your sister sent you. Like, oh, I don't want to read it. She's like, well, put it on an audiobook. And then when on the way to Washington, we'd listen to it or something.
Yeah. How, what a great example to be teaching your kids that at such a young age of, you know, you're not the one sitting down having a conversation like this, but you're, you know, engulfing them in that lifestyle and engulfing them in, you know, the way to live and how you want, you know, how you want to raise them and then have them personally also drive themselves to a higher standard.
Yeah. We listen to motivational talk every day on the way to school. Wow. You know, or on the way home from track. And I have real conversations with them. I don't treat them like they're 14 and 12.
Yeah.
I talk to them as I talk to a 30-year-old man or a 28-year-old man. Hey, these are the expectations, man. This is reality. Because in life, when you go out to the real world, No one's going to give you a break. No one's going to cut you slack. Right. It's real. It's cutthroat out there, you know? And so for me, I always talk to them about, hey, these are the standards you should be practicing. You should be motivated every day. You need to do these things. And not necessarily you have to. Mm-hmm. These are things that help me develop as a person.
You're giving them those tools, same thing, those little nuggets that you're putting in pockets. Yeah. Hopefully they're grabbing something of what you're saying and just kind of putting it in their pockets. And then, you know, while they develop and they experience things, then they can use that knowledge with them.
No, absolutely. One thing that really helped me help them is me stop being so critical of what they listen to or what they watch, because they're still kids.
Yeah.
But when they're in my car, I'm putting it, the motivational stuff on, Kobe Bryant's talks, Michael Jordan's talks, what they did in their careers, how to become these great empires, you know, and they're listening to it. I know they are, because I can see them look like, oh, that was good. Hey, Dad, rewind that real quick. Or when we get home, like, hey, remember when Kobe said he missed 1,000 shots, or he did this, or he did that? I'm like, oh, yeah. He's like, well, we got to do that. We got to go to the garage and work on this wrestling stuff. We got to do this. You know, I want to do that. It's like, okay, it's your time. It's your decision. I'm not going to force you guys to be this, but I'm going to be there for when you're ready to be this, you know, and if it's a champion in wrestling, champion in life, engineer, lawyer, whatever you need, whatever I can do to help get them there, because that's something I never had in my life, you know, single mom, raising two of us, but really like five of us, because cousins would stay with us. We lived in a two-bedroom apartment, cockroach infested thing. Like, Yeah, I didn't have that leadership in my life that I thought I should have had, but I also didn't know as a kid what my mom was going through. Mm-hmm. So 10, what do I know? What do I understand? Two jobs, you know, small apartment, you know, we're on welfare. I didn't understand all that stuff, but I knew when I got older, about 25, I was like, I don't want that for my kids.
Yeah.
I want to give them a better life. But in turn doing that, we want them to do that for their kids, and they have a better life. And now you've changed the culture of your family, the financial stability, the successes. You do it, they get a little bit more, and then their kids get a little bit more.
It's a building effect of each generation building on top of one another. Because, I mean, I think people think that it's like, oh, the life success or whatever. And it's like, no, it's a revolving. I mean, every generation, we're just trying to get better. Like, everybody's situation, anybody you see on the street, it's like you have no idea what they're going through, and they may be trying to do their very best, just like your mom. Like, you know what, her very best was an apartment, you know, two bedrooms with cockroach infested. Like, at least you were on the streets.
Yeah.
You know, and like seeing that perspective of somebody of like, is that the best thing? No, but it was the best for them. Mm-hmm. And just having that, you know, different perspective on things.
Yeah, my mom was I love my mom. She's great, you know. She taught me a lot. She taught me a whole bunch out of that little apartment, you know. She taught me how to be tough, you know, something I didn't know I was going to be able to teach my kids. Because I remember there one time I'm running from school as hard as I can because these kids are chasing me on bikes. And I'm like, oh, my God, these guys are going to beat my ass. I'm like, I got to get inside the house, like, quick. So I get in the house, and I'm crying. My mom's sitting there like you are. She's like, why are you crying? I said, there's like six boys out here that want to beat me up. And she's like, what? I'm like, yeah, there's six boys that want to beat me up. She's like, oh, that's okay. Opens the door. And she's like, hey, you guys want to jump my kid? I'm like, yeah, I want to fight him. She's like, yeah, you guys can fight him, but one-on-one. I look at her, I'm like, what do you mean, like, one-on-one? Like, you want me to fight? Like, you want me to be out here fighting the street? Like, are you kidding me? And she's like, no one's going to teach you life lessons like this. So she put me in the middle of the grass. She's like, okay, first one up, let's go. And right about time where I'm going to fight all these kids one-on-one, the older brother comes around the corner and he's like, hey, what are you guys doing? No, get home. And I was like, oh, my God, thank God. My mom was like, if you don't fight them, I'm going to beat your ass. You know, like, she was hardcore like that. You know, she's hardcore. But so she taught me a lot. Regardless of our situation, she tried her very best, like you said. Her best, in turn, taught me to be my best, you know. And then I do the best for my boys, and hopefully one day they do that for them, for their kids, boys, girls, whatever, indifferent. Yeah. One thing I got to say about that is, like, I can't do what I do with my sons if I don't have somebody like my wife supporting me in doing those things and her accepting me being kind of hard or honest with them, because it's not always fun. Because for a mother, I bet you it's tough for their dad to be in their son's face saying, hey, that's not okay. That's not how we do things. This is that. And then they're crying and mom wants to hug them and love them and say, baby, it's okay, son. But she's been awesome. She's like, all right, do your thing. But when we kind of closed doors, she's like, hey, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't talk to him like that. You shouldn't say those words. She has my back in the moment, but she also coaches me too, because she was raised with two parents. I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I'm learning as I go.
Yeah, absolutely. You didn't have that example to kind of reflect off of.
Oh, for sure.
You had the mindset of, this is what I don't want to do, and this is what I don't want to be like.
My mindset was always to just survive, right? Yeah. My mom, I wasn't around. She wasn't around for very long when I was 18. You know, I was on my own, doing my own thing. And, you know, that time you could have fake IDs and nobody said anything. I met a good friend of mine, Scott Johnston, and he and I, we just kind of ran the streets, and he taught me a lot of not so good things and a lot of fun things, you know. And so I was just on my own, just trying to make my own mistakes and learn. And my mom let me do those things. But it's hard. It's so hard to be the example for everybody, you know, whether it's at work, whether it's at home, whether it's loving your wife, showing your boys what your wife deserves, or the professional person you need to be. Your boys are watching that, or the people you work with, they're watching you on your outside of life, because I have an Instagram and they might see it. And careful what you post there, because they're noticing it too. You know, it's tough when you're under the spotlight quite a bit.
I was going to ask, like, what is it like being underneath the spotlight that much? I mean, if it's not your family, it's your business. And if it's not, you know, one thing, it's another, of like everybody looking in on you and kind of expecting you to be that leader and be that mentor. And if you're teaching this, then you need to be this. Yeah. You know, how does that, you know, kind of evolve of the spotlight always being on you?
I'd be lying if I said it was easy, because it's not easy. A lot of pressure. And not that it's not welcomed pressure, or I accept it, because that's who I am and that's what I wanted. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Be careful what you wish for, because now that I'm there, I've got to change my mindset. I've got to change the things I do. I've got to be a better human. And I got to surround myself with people who want to be better humans, who want to do better in their lives. And that means sometimes losing friends. That means losing family members. It means being kind of by yourself and surrounding yourself with people with like-minded ideas. The one thing I tell my team all the time is, like, you put an oak tree in a small vase, it's only going to grow so much in its environment. Mm-hmm. You change the oak tree's environment, put it out in the middle of the woods, you watch it bloom and grow. Yeah. Sometimes you got to change your environment, and it's unfortunate, but it's reality, you know? And so being under that spotlight is something that I always wanted, because I thought it'd always be fun. And the fun part is watching others grow.
Yeah.
It's not only about me, it's about when you're doing all the right things and then you watch the people underneath you grow and they see success and they have, and they buy and they have their kids, they get married. That's the successes. That's fun part of leadership. And those are the things I wanted. I want to do for those who never, no one did for me. Yeah. I had a couple people in my life that did it for me. But I've had more examples in my life of what not to be versus what to be. Mm-hmm. And although you have that, even though my dad wasn't around, I took on some of his personality, even though he was never around. And so it's hard to say that you don't revert or you don't fall back, because you still have that blood running through your body, you know, the same bloodline. So when you have the spotlight on you, there's times where it's like, I just need to close the door and be by myself. And 10 minutes to reflect, 20 minutes to reflect, an hour, whatever you need. My wife convinced me to start working out again. And that's the piece that I've been missing, I think, for a long time, is that put your headphones in, ride your bike, get a good sweat in, and it's like, whoo, that felt good. You know, like, man, I didn't think about anything. Yeah. I just thought about the moment I was in, and that was the time alone, but yet I was with her, and that was fun, and that's fun. So that spotlight sometimes can push you down, and it can really question your values. It can really question you, like, do I really want this? Do I really want to keep being under the spotlight? Your kids looking at you, your wife asking questions, team expecting stuff out of you. And it's not only one team, I have 5 different locations. Not only that, we have a headquarters office. And not only do I try to manage down, but I try to manage up and try to incorporate a culture for everybody, a life culture at home, culture of family with my boys and my wife, culture at stores, car washes, culture at the headquarters office. So like I said, sometimes under the spotlight's not always the best place, but for me, I appreciate being there.
Yeah. Do you think being in that spotlight, you are always striving? I mean, it sounds like you're always striving for better and you're always chasing something. I mean, how do you keep doing that and having the energy and having the mindset and having, you know, the motivation for you to continue to strive for all of those people? Like, it's very rewarding seeing them come back and be like, hey, Shad, like, you know, what you said is really great. And this is what I learned, or this is how I implemented it. But there's still a motivation part behind that of still chasing it and continuing to be in the spotlight.
It's the people. I could help one gentleman get to where they want to be, but there's always tons more people needing help to be pulled forward. I find those people, I don't know what it is, but I attract those people to me. It's like, oh, that person has so much potential. I gotta put my energy into them, or I gotta put my energy into this person. And it just keeps pushing you forward and you keep wanting more. The problem about wanting more is, when are you satisfied?
Yeah.
Whether it's financial, whether it's culture, whether it's bringing people up, taking them here, taking them there. Whether it's your kids winning or losing in their wrestling matches, you want more for them, want more. Well, they're doing the best they can, and just accept that for your kids. But, you know, always, all the time, I find myself striving for more. And it actually damaged my marriage a little bit, because I focused on more, and I was giving financially, but there was no intimacy. There was no love. And you got to remember, when you're chasing something, there's always somebody there supporting you. And it's usually that person that lays next to you every night in bed. And whether it's your husband, your wife, you know, your partner, life partner, your parents, whoever's in your back, your corner, when you're striving for success, you're not doing it alone. There's people behind you that are there to support you, because we're going to fail, we're going to fall. Those people pick you up. And if you don't show them love and they're not there to pick you up, next time you're going to fall flat on your back and you're not going to know how to get up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's those people that I think we passively, you know, they're our biggest supporters, but they're always there.
Yeah.
You know, we expect them to always be there. And then those are the people that also are the very first ones to lose that relationship or that concept, you know, between those people. With that, I mean, how is that with your marriage? I mean, it sounds like you've had some rocky patches. How are you? That's life. That's any relationship or partnership. But how are you working with her to still chase what you want, but you're bringing her along and still building this life?
So we had a moment of, we just say, hey, we're not in the right place. We need to figure this out, right? I had to come to realization about myself. I had to ask myself, who are you? You know, are you the right person for this person? Like, are you being the best version of yourself for your wife and your family, or best version for yourself and your financial stability and your career? Right. And that's selfish to say, oh, it's just about my career, because I wouldn't have my career if I didn't have her in my life. Right. She sacrificed her career so that I could have mine. How selfish of me to say, hey, I'm going to keep chasing my career. I don't need you anymore, because I've gotten to the place where I want to be.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time. Have a good life. That ain't fair. Right. You know, and I lost relationship with my boys because I was giving them everything. Money. Hey, you need this? Yeah, boom, here you go. Here's five, here's 20, here's 100. Do this. Buy new shoes, buy wrestling shoes, buy this, buy that. But that's all they saw. They didn't see, hey, Dad, give me a hug. Dad, give me a kiss goodnight. You know,
that
Dad, let's go have that quality time together. You know, and so I had to ask myself, who do I want to be? And when I thought about that, I thought about my future. When I'm 70 years old and I'm sitting in the living room and my grandkids come over, am I going to greet my grandkids by myself, or do I have my wife in the dream house that we always talked about, and the beautiful home for the kids to enjoy and the grandkids to enjoy? You can do that by yourself if you want. I didn't want that, you know? And so I had to ask myself, are your goals, your financial success goals outweighing your life partner and your children and the love that you have in your life? Quit sacrificing the love for the financials. Because if you have the love in your corner and the love behind you, the financials are going to come. The success is going to come naturally.
Right.
You know, treat your family like gold, and they're going to have your back in whatever you do. And you start doing whatever you can to be successful, you're going to win.
Yeah.
And the other piece to that, too, I listened to a podcast the other day, and this guy said, I love my wife so much. She means the world to me. But I really love success. I really love financial stability. He's a big old buff bodybuilder. And he goes, but what I do is I created a time frame from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. It's my bodybuilding time. From 7 to 8, I'm a businessman. From 8 to night to close my eyes, I'm a family man. And he talked to his wife about it, and they sat down, they organized a schedule, and now it works. And he saved his marriage because he learned how to decarbonize all those things. I didn't know that until a month ago.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about it. Like, hey, this is for working out. This is for business. And this is for your family.
Yeah.
And it just takes learning.
It does.
You don't know what you don't know. And nobody showed me how, and no one's taught me how, and no one's been a good example for me. So I was like, what the hell, what I'm doing? But here I am figuring it out now.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you have so much self-awareness of like, something's wrong. There's a problem. I need to fix it, instead of just saying like, oh, you know, I'm continuing with my life. Work is good. I'll forget about my marriage while I'm at work because, you know, making that money makes me happy, or striving for that next thing at work makes me happy. But reevaluating yourself and saying like, hey, is this really what I want? Is this really what I hold value in life? And nobody teaches us that.
I actually looked at myself in the mirror one day, and I just like, man, you're an ugly person. Like, you need to change who you are. Like, you're ugly. Just because you have a couple dollars in the bank account doesn't make you a better person. Do you know how to love people? Do you know how to be a good, you're a good leader, but are you leading with love? Are you leading with passion? Or are you just leading for money? Yeah. Like, I started leading with love at work, and it changed my successes. But I didn't do that at home. I didn't start leading with love at home. You know, I loved my boys and I treated them well, but it wasn't the right type of love. It was a financial love. I stopped going on dates with my wife. I stopped loving her and stopped dancing in the kitchen like we used to. When we were broke, we had a better relationship.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we're rich, but we're saying we're stable.
You're stable. Yeah, for sure.
You know, and so got comfortable, and then you just stopped doing those little things. You know, so I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, dude, you're an ugly person. I don't even recognize you. I had a real conversation in a mirror to myself, and I broke it down in tears, and I was like, dude, get it together. And I started talking to a counselor, you know, help me out through these things and that. And so it's been great. You know, I mean, not perfect. I'm not where I want to be, but those are some of the things, you know, we got to ask ourselves, and hey, what do I really do? What do I really want? Who am I? Who am I as a person? You can get lost.
Yeah.
When you're serving everybody else, you get lost.
Yeah.
You go down this little rabbit hole, and you're like, all of a sudden you wake up and you're like, who am I? Yeah. Where am I at? You know?
Well, when you ask yourself, you're like, what do I want? And you're like, I don't know. Like, you know, I know I do that several times where I'm like, what do I want? And it's like, I honestly don't know sometimes, because it's you're always chasing that helping other people, and then you lose yourself.
You
really lose yourself. And I mean, I give you kudos for going out and asking for counseling. I mean, especially being a man, especially being, you know, Hispanic, like that's not something that you hear every day. And I mean, it's very vulnerable for you to tell us that, you know, and I appreciate that, because that is truly raw thoughts. And that's what it's here is like, you know what, you may not know where to go or what to do, but there are resources to help you get through that and to get to the next step. And you've got to that next step, you know. And you wouldn't be where you are today if it hadn't been for all that shit you've gone through. But you've learned from it, and you've grown from it, and you've, you know, progressed from all of those things.
Yeah, thank you. You said something right there that's really true. Is like, being a Hispanic male, we're expected to just go work. The wife stays home. She cooks. That's like Mexican culture. Like, you're the provider. You do this. It's called machismo, you know. It's like, we're this guy. We carry it all. We do what I want. That's not me. Like, I don't want to be that, you know? And I'd see families like that, you know, in the Hispanic culture. Is like, in my household, 50-50. I help fold laundry. I vacuum. I dust, you know? I do yard. Well, I'm doing yard work. I pay a kid. I'm not going to lie. I pay a kid. But anyways, but I 50-50 things. Like, I'm cool with that. You know, I'm down to clean. I'm OCD, though, a little bit. But I like to clean the house. And I want the boys to see that one day when they get married, they should be helping their wives. Mm-hmm. You know, and help their wives clean up and help put dinner away and help put the dishes away. It's a partnership. It's not easy, but we got to do it.
Yeah.
And whatever the Mexican culture says, or the male culture says, or society says about men, well, you shouldn't be getting counseling. No, dude, I need it.
Yeah.
Bro, you don't know where I came from. I came from nothing, you know, and I didn't know how to do things. And now I need somebody to help me understand how to do things.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's okay to ask for help. You'd be more willing to go ask somebody to borrow $100 than ask your mental health.
Yeah.
Right? It's easier. Hey, can I borrow $100? Yeah, sure, man. What you need for it? Hey, don't worry about it. But go asking for help, that's a bad thing? No, we're thinking wrong.
Yeah. How do you, I mean, you are a leader for so many people. How are you implementing that to as many kids and as many people that you talk with of like, hey, if you need that help, like ask for that help. Because I think that is such a strong stigma. I mean, within the world of like, you know, mental health, and that we're seeing so many suicides and we're seeing, you know, lack of mental health resources. Yeah. But it's a daily thing we need. You know, we have our heart, we have our mind, we have, you know, you're trying to juggle all these things. And it's like, we are, as humans, are not built to do this alone. About partnership. And so how are you, I mean, or do you implement, you know, anything within your teaching about that?
At work? Yeah. I talk to my guys all the time behind closed doors and say, hey, how's your life going? How are things going with you? Regardless about business, right? How's your home life? Mm-hmm. Do you have a good life work balance? If you don't, we need to figure that out. Because Derek Martin, my boss, does that for me. He says, hey, man, if you need some work life balance, you let me know because you need that. And what I always tell my guys is my experiences. I'm honest with them. Hey, man, me and my wife, we fight about this. We fight about financials. We fight about this or that. And then they're like, well, how do you talk to your boys? Like, I'm honest with them. I say, hey, dude. You know, conversation I just had with my son named Jameson. I said, hey, you want to be successful, you got to go get it. No one's going to come to you and give you it on a platter. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to work for it, you know, and go do the things that nobody else is doing. And then I had a kid named Danny at work. Same conversation. He's 23. Jameson's 14. I said, hey, dude, you want to be the next general manager? You want to do the next thing? Well, what are you doing differently than everybody else? How are you going to get there? How are you separating yourself? So, leadership and all that kind of stuff, how I implement it is real life. I wouldn't tell my sons anything. I wouldn't tell a person I work with either, or I wouldn't tell myself in the mirror. But I think that implementing what I do, like if it's okay to ask for help, is just being vulnerable with them. We had a big meeting at work where we did this Who's Your Hero? I think we talked about the Triple H, yeah. And when it was my turn, my son had messaged me and he said, hey, Dad, I love you. You're my hero. And I broke down in tears in front of all my managers. I was like, hold on, I need a timeout. Like that vulnerability changed all of us in the way we view each other. Mm-hmm. And as we went around the room and talked about our vulnerabilities, it was great. But I'm not going to talk about what we talked about just because it's private and in that room. I always tell my guys, you know, hey, whatever, I'm open door. What do you guys want to talk about? What do you need? You know, how could I help you? Whether it's at work, whether it's in life, whether it's financially, you know, we have a guy named Chris Bauer who works for us, super smart guy about the trading, mm-hmm. Stock market, all that stuff. When they ask me financial stuff, hey, call Chris. Because he's the one that gives me advice, you know. Yeah. So he's a general manager. He just loves that kind of stuff. So we all are just a little community at work.
Yeah. What is the, you talked earlier about the culture that you have at work versus the culture that you have, you know, at home. What's that culture that you're building at work?
Love first. Yeah. Coach first, discipline second. Never look in the rearview mirror when you make a mistake. Professionalism, standards, that culture of just like being the best. You put your needs aside for a second. And what does your team need? Because in leadership, I feel like managers have the title, leaders have the people.
Wow.
And so when you have the people, they'll grow your bottom line. That's facts. But you have to love your team. You have to love the people. You got to be there for them when they need you. Mm-hmm. And they're looking for direction. Everybody wants to have guideline. You know, they want to do the right things by you, especially when you have a strong culture like we do, where the standards are so high because we want to be the best. Bill Murray says, somebody has to be number one, might as well be us.
Yeah.
Right. And I believe that. Yeah. Why not? I want everybody else to chase us. I chase nobody.
Yeah.
And sometimes people don't want to live to that standard. It's hard, but you can get them there. And those are the fun people. The ones that don't understand the standard and you try to get them there. That's the culture you want. Culture of leadership, culture of winning, culture of living by example. You know, I go to a lot of different businesses and I always try to watch and see like restaurants, bars, bowling alleys, whatever it is, and just like kind of watch how the employees interact, and you can tell which companies have good cultures and which ones don't.
Yeah,
you know. And I want other people that come to our place to see, like, oh, these guys got a rich culture. They're great. You know, they love their team. They love the customers. They're here to serve us. You know, that's what I want. You know, yeah. That's the culture there. And the culture at home is just love as well.
Yeah.
One. Number two, honorable, respectful. When my boys go into a new home that we don't know people, they're expected to shake hands, look you in the eye and say, hey, my name is Jameson. Hi, my name is Jacoby. And I do the same. Hi, my name is Shad. And my wife, she's comes from a white background. She's adopted that culture. Hi, I'm Kayla. We introduce ourselves. That's just who we are. And we look people in the eye and we talk to them. So that is rich to me. Watching my boys do that, they've bought into the culture. Going to the car washes and seeing our team do those things, that's rich. I love that. I love to see them buy in to the culture we're trying to develop. Yeah. You keep people long-term when you do that.
Yeah. I mean, you're rich in love instead of rich in money. And money will follow that rich in love.
Yeah. 100%. I told my team all the time. I think I said it earlier. Love your people and they'll build your bottom line. Mm-hmm. People want to do right by you. They want to be a part of the team. They want to be heard. They want to be involved. They want to do those right things. They want a pat on the back. They want a hug. They want a high five. They want a gift card to Dutch Brothers. They want a gift card to Amazon.
Yeah.
They want to be part of something great. When you create that for them, they come to work enthusiastic, ready to go, ready to win the day, ready to serve the customer, ready to serve each other. When the day's hard and we're getting really busy and it's time to clock out and go home, that person's like, I'm going to stay because I love my teammates.
Yeah.
I stay because I want to keep helping them. You know, they put themselves aside and they say, I got to do this for the team. And those are the cultures that are so much fun to watch or develop or build. And when you start seeing that happen, you know you're doing the right thing.
Yeah. With this, I mean, especially in our world, we're seeing so much turnover with jobs. Yeah. And working with a car wash, right, you have a lot of entry-level people. Do you see any, you know, implementing these cultures that they stick around for longer versus other car washes or, like, retention more than other restaurants because of this culture?
I can't speak for other industries. You know, I don't know what their turnover rate is. I know what ours is. It's like 0.01.
You
know? We keep people long-term. And when we lose them, they're going on bigger, better things.
Yeah.
But they've learned leadership at our company. They've learned how to interact. They know how to read a P&L. They know how to behave themselves. They know how to be a professional. They know how to sit in interviews. They know how to interact with difficult customers. They've learned all that. They learned how to enrich themselves around rich people. Mm-hmm. Right? They learn all those things. Like we always talk about being a leadership company, and I say we're a leadership company. We just happen to wash cars. Yeah. We want to develop people. I want young men, young women to say, hey, I learned so much from them. I learned so much from that company. In return, they're going to send us great help. Mm-hmm. And whether we have them for a year or 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, however long we have them, I want them to learn as much as possible. And I want to be an open book to them and help them learn as much as possible. The turnover rate for us usually is they move from site to site. You know, we got to backfill that person. They just got promoted as a general manager. Or that person became an ops manager. We got to backfill that person. You know, so we want to build more car washes or we want to grow our business, whatever business it is. You need people. You need a bench. You need to grow your team. So I feel like our turnover is usually we build new washes and they go move on and they become general managers, ops managers, supervisors or whatever they do in our business. And that's the goal. You know, Bill Martin's a great guy. He's not a selfish man. Derek Martin, not a selfish man. Mike Curtis, their whole family is great. Great business, great company, and great leadership.
Yeah.
And in turn, that helps me become a better leader myself.
Yeah. Where, I mean, maybe you know this or maybe you don't. Like, where do you think that they got this drive to really enrich this within a car wash? Like you said, I mean, you're a leadership team. You just happen to wash cars.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. I mean, I go to the car wash multiple times a week, and they are the people that you see, and they, you know, their attitudes and their how they represent the brand, for sure. But I mean, do you know much about the family or why they really enrich this in a car wash? Like, I mean, I think people listening are like, a car wash?
Yeah.
Like, really?
Well, one, you make money. we're in business to make money first and foremost, but they also just love people. They're just good humans, right? And they just care about people. I don't know how to explain it. Just I can see it when I talk to them. They care about people. They care about their business. And one thing that's super admirable is that Bill's creating this company for himself, but also for his legacy and for his family and for what they're going to do in their future. He's created something bigger than himself, you know? And I think that's where a lot of it comes from. When you're striving to build something bigger than yourself, leadership's natural, you know, you're going to start doing that. And he has a son who's awesome. He has another son in Montana who does a great job too. But when you sit back and watch them operate, it's just, they care about people. They just good humans. I don't even know how to explain it. It's just, you have to be a part of the team to meet these people and then meet the leadership team. And you're going to see like, oh, okay, I get it. Okay. I get it. But it's hard to tell you. I can show you better than I can tell you.
Yeah. While we kind of wrap things up, like what is something that you want to leave the listeners with a little gem in life?
I'm going to base it off of my boys because I think this is a message that was developed and said to me, not said to me, but something that was real to me is your kids' wins and losses aren't a reflection of your parenting. The way they carry themselves off the mat, off the basketball court, off the tennis court, how they behave there, that is a direct reflection of your parenting. Okay. So don't get caught up on their wins and losses. Those are just, they're just developing good human skills, how to win, how to lose. When people say, hey, you spend all this money on your kids to go to these camps or do these tournaments, how come they're not winning more? Who cares what they think?
Right.
Your kids' wins and losses are not a reflection of your parenting whatsoever. It's the way they carry themselves, the respect they have. That's a reflection of your parenting. So never forget that. And just the wins and losses will come.
That's awesome. So you're not a fan of everybody has participation trophies?
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a quick funny story. My son's got a participation award in Spokane or La Grande, a little plastic medal. I said, hey, what are those for? Like, oh, they gave them out to everybody. Like, why? You guys both lost your matches. You guys didn't win anything. Throw those away. Things aren't free in life. That's free. Put it in the trash. And they were devastated. Threw them in the trash. But that next weekend, they practiced so much harder and they won some matches and they got little medals. Like those ones you get to keep.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. Well, thank you for coming on and being so vulnerable and talking with us. And kudos to you. Do you want to tell us, like, if anybody wants to be a part of your culture at Metro Car Wash, like, how do they get a hold of you?
MetroExpressCarWash.com. You can go on there. There's a career button. Down click, apply. We always want great people. Never turn great people away. You know, regardless if we're fully staffed, we'll find a spot.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Shad, for coming on. I appreciate it. And we will see you guys again.
Absolutely. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning into the show today. Your feedback is very important to me. If you could leave a review as well as follow me on Instagram at rawthoughts.podcast and email in at m.rawthoughts@gmail.com if you have any guest suggestions. We'll be right back.